present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the news quiz, and indeed welcome to 2017, which we hope will be every inch the non-stop festival of fun that 2016 was. We start with something from an article about Van Gogh in The Guardian, read by Caroline Nichols.
Van Gogh was bleeding copiously after slashing his ear with a razor, so he wrapped the piece of ear in paper and walked to his favourite brothel, where he gave it to a young woman he knew.
Thanks to Mark Hopcroft from Malvern for keeping us up to date with that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Danny Finkelstein and Andy Parsons. So, Jeremy, who's resigned to our fate?
Sir Ivan Rogers, who was our ambassador to the EU. There's quite a lot to get through here and it is quite dry, so let's crack on. Basically, he led our negotiation. He's loathed by Brexiteers. He's a predatory Europhile. And he he's hated. And the hatred started when he led our renegotiation of our membership of the EU with Cameron. And he was warned by Ivan Rogers that it wouldn't go well. European leaders are not going to just give us what we want. He keeps giving this advice to ministers, and this has made him very unpopular. He's denounced by Brexiteers as being a gloomy pessimist. But, you know, I thought the referendum was supposed to be about more than the bottom line, about more than trade and money, and I thought it was about who we are. And who we are is gloomy pessimists. That's our national characteristics. What defines us is a defiant and chipper resignation about the absolute crapness of life. And no Brussels bureaucrat should ever take that away from me, nor any perky Atlanticist. Anyways, it's got to the point that Sir Ivan Rogers is so upset with being ignored and clearly upset that civil services advice is not being taken that he has resigned. And his resignation letter was part saying, look, I'm leaving because my predecessor needs time to get into the post. But also there was a parting shot where he criticised ministers for not listening to civil servants and he championed civil servants. And I tend to feel quite sorry for civil servants because they are the people who basically run the country while ministers fanny around saying, look at me, I'm important, trying to make up for the love they didn't receive when they were backbenchers. And so he's really upset a lot of people on the Brexit wing of the Tory party, including Peter Lilly, who condemned the resignation letter, and also Irritable Duncan Syndrome pitched in. But the new man is as another sir, but they're very pleased. Davis and Johnson are very pleased about the new Barrow man, just in that way that you would be when you've got absolutely no idea what you're doing and somebody turns up. It's like when British Gas arrive, they might not stop water pouring through the ceiling, but, you know, they take two sugars, so there's a stronger chance that they'll be able to fix it than you will. So we've now got this new sir in charge and all sorts of people have chipped in. Farage! Nigel Farage. You have to feel sorry for Paul Nuttall because no one cares what he thinks. And he must ring the BBC saying, hello, it's Paul Nuttall here. I'm the new leader of UKIP. And, you know, if you ever want any of my opinions on anything, they say, oh, look, is your dad there? Yeah, OK. Nigel, I want to speak to you.
He wanted the job, didn't he, Farage?
Oh, yeah, he thought they would send him because you would do that, wouldn't you, in a diplomatic role.
It's like he really doesn't know what to do with himself now, does he? Sort of turned up in America, decided he'd start doing a job there no one asked him to do. He's like the bloke who cleans your windscreen at traffic lights.
And will you personally miss Ivan Rogers, Andy?
Well, his trouble was, and he said that there was going to be... said it might take 10 years for us to negotiate Brexit. And nobody liked this, did they? David Davis going, well, he said, we'll be able to do it. He said, as long as we're nimble, we should be able to do it in 2 years. And you're thinking, well, if there was a word that you were going to use to describe Boris Johnson, nimble would not be it. We all saw what happened when he was playing rugby, what happened to that small Japanese kid. If Boris Johnson was in a China shop, the bull would be found innocent.
Yeah. where does this leave us all, then?
Well, I was quite amused that he was called permanent representative. You don't know, not that permanent. It didn't yeah. I don't think actually being in the EU that turned out to be that permanent. Well, it was a bit confusing, that story, because basically, as far as I can see, he said he couldn't remain because he's worried about us leaving. And then people who want to leave don't want him to remain because they're worried that if he remains, we won't leave. But now that he has left, the problem of leaving remains. So I'm not sure I followed the story.
I'm not sure why people are surprised. He's basically he's the bloke who's decided to sell his ticket to the Titanic, isn't it? It's not because he says in his resignation letter, he's pointed to the fact that the government don't really know what they're doing over Brexit. You know, that we're wandering into this Brexit like we're wandering into the back of a wardrobe, and at the moment we don't know if it's Narnia or just a stack of old pornos. That's I mean, either way, Boris Johnson's happy, but we don't know.
I suppose the idea is that, you know, he's an expert, isn't it? It's almost like he's a builder, and the government is saying...
Had enough of the experts, Miles, haven't we? We've had enough.
That's a wall. You just need to take the wall down. And he's saying, well, I don't want to take the wall down. It's a structural wall. But they're saying, no, well, we want you to take the wall down. The people have spoken. Take down the wall. We need to put an RSJ. And, yeah, the people have had enough of RSJs or whatever it is.
It's not going that well for Theresa May, is it? I think she's finally realised that maybe it wasn't such a good idea. She's had this long strategy. You know, her school friend said, oh, she always wanted to be Prime Minister, and she's played a game. We're making sure she's got no enemies in the party. Everybody kind of likes her. She's kind of liked on both wings of the Tory party. She wasn't really clear what she thought about Brexit. She played it very carefully so that she would become leader, and now she's leader. And you look at her and you think, you've realised that none of it was really worth it, haven't you, really, Theresa? It's a bit like when you get your kitchen done and the builders leave and you look around and you realise your problem never really was the kitchen.
Indistinguishably, this is the news that Sir Ivan Rogers is to resign as Britain's permanent representative to the European Union. What I want to know is what kind of man resigns the day after coming back from Christmas break? You've had 2 weeks off, Ivan. Get your face out of the panettone. Go back to sodding work. Sir Ivan was expected to carry on in his current role until October, but felt that a better way to prepare for Brexit was to spend the next 9 months stockpiling tinned food and dragging mattresses into a cellar. Sir Ivan left with a note to his staff, which is rather uncommon when leaving a role. I'd much rather he be frog-marched out by security as he kicks and struggles, calling Karen from HR a snide bitch who's wanted this from day one. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, whose prices are off the rails?
So, this is the story that train fares have risen by an average of 2.3% in the UK, and we now pay on average 6 times more for our season tickets for our rail fare than our European peers. So, for example, if you're a season ticket holder in Luton, say commuting to London, you pay an average of £387 a month, whereas for the equivalent distance in Paris, they pay £61 a month, and they don't have to live in Luton. I had to go to Glasgow before Christmas, right? It's true. And I was a last minute replacement for someone at a show in Glasgow, and it cost me £250 to get to Glasgow and back. Right? You double that if you buy a sandwich, right? It cost Tim Peake less to go to work than it cost me.
It's funny you should say that, Angela, because I had to go to Glasgow and I looked and the standard off-peak to Glasgow was £134 by train. And if you can fly to Barcelona for £40. If you've got a meeting in Glasgow, it shouldn't be cheaper to fly yourself out to Barcelona and then fly from Barcelona to Glasgow. But possibly even better than that, if you've got a meeting in Glasgow, right, actually just fly yourself out to Barcelona for £40. Whoever you're meeting in Glasgow, fly them out to Barcelona as well.
My brother went to a conference in Glasgow and went back with somebody from the conference. On the way back, the train inspector came and asked the guy for his ticket. He searched, he couldn't find it anywhere. Train inspector decided to let him off. He arrived home, told his wife that he'd had this terrible journey, come back on the train from Glasgow, hadn't had his ticket, and his wife said, "That's great, but what did you do with our car?"
Happening with the trains, don't you? I mean, Theresa May, the one thing she has a preference, 50 million for High Speed Rail Link 2, so as we can get from Birmingham to London 20 minutes quicker. And I have absolutely no confidence that we won't actually get to London 20 minutes quicker, but be kept just outside of London for 20 minutes waiting for a platform to become available. And then just as you start going, due to some signalling problems, you see the slow train from Birmingham chugging past you.
surely the thing to do if you want to speed up your journey by 20 minutes is just walk to the front of the train before it arrives. One of the reasons why it is so much cheaper to travel in Germany, Holland or France is that Germany, Holland and France own our railways and benefit from all the subsidies that they get. Because we have got nationalised railways, it's just not our nation that owns them.
Southern Rail, it's so bad at the moment, isn't it? It's been going on for so long that actually if people who use Southern Rail hear that there's a bus replacement service, they cheer.
The situation is ridiculous. Michael Payne has just pitched a series, like London to Brighton in 80 days. That's it.
The reason for the Southern Rail strike, though, isn't it? It's because basically they're trying to decide who opens the doors. Is it going to be the guards or is it going to be the driver? This is what the dispute is about. The train company saying they don't want the guards to do it because it means extra training. But often when the train arrives, doesn't it, the train stops. Right, there's some beeping noises, you press the button, the door opens, you get on, you then press the button, the door closes. Now, I've had no training. But I think I'm pretty good at that.
Have you ever tried pressing the button when the train's not at a station, though, Andy?
I haven't, no.
Because that, I mean, they're the ones that have unlocked the doors to make that possible for you. I'm not saying that what you're saying doesn't stand up to scrutiny, but there is an element of safety involved. There is. So someone has to unlock the door for you to get the little sort of go when you get a little bit of a power rush when you're the person in charge of opening the train.
I take that point, but what they're saying is, they're saying that the guards, they want to make them now onboard supervisors and they don't do the doors, right? But you're thinking, surely the doors are on board. Yeah. Surely that should be part of their supervision. Are they saying that if somebody actually gets stuck, you know, in the door, the onboard supervisor will be looking at that going, nothing to do with me. Most of them is outside. Yeah, yeah.
The trouble is that those of us who are zealous about renationalisation do somewhat sentimentalise nationalised railways and, you know, our memories are somewhat rose-tinted now. We tend to think of British Rail as a golden age of steam. And Bernard Cribbins is doing the signals. And standing on the track is Jenny Agutter. And she's naked with an Aborigine.
I think you might have been watching quite a short reel of her work there. sort of collage thing. Does anyone know what held up a train from London to Edinburgh this week?
Jesse James.
It was not
it the bloke who was
Ombres,
trying to find his car in Glasgow and got on the wrong train?
It was a scorpion. A scorpion escaped on a train from London to Edinburgh, and the train had to be held up at Peterborough while the scorpion was removed.
I thought you meant like a giant scorpion on the track. I was quite excited then for a
sort of Jason and the Argonauts.
I thought you meant someone who was born in November.
Importunately, this is the news that rail passengers across the country have been hit by New Year price hikes as part of the rail industry's ongoing commitment to find the fastest way of getting things from A to B, where A is your bank account and B is the pockets of the chief executive of Abellio. We apparently pay on average 6 times as much as rail passengers in Europe, although they don't have the privilege of regularly pausing for upwards of 3/4 of an hour just outside Peterborough while the man across the aisle is noisily sick into a Sainsbury's bag for life. Southern Rail have recently been out on strike again, meaning no trains were running from London to Brighton, a state of affairs largely indistinguishable from their normal operations, except that passengers were spared the misery of hope. Also this week, a Virgin East Coast train from London to Edinburgh had to be halted after a scorpion escaped on board. A Virgin spokesman said that while the scorpion had been wandering down the train, there were plenty of free seats it could have taken. There wasn't any need... any need to sit outside the toilets grumpily making a video. 2 points to Angela. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Angela have 4, and so too do Danny and Andy. We start round two with an online January offer from Hot UK Deals.
Gold or black Beats headphones were £169.99, now £179.99.
Our thanks to Keith Giles in Chislehurst for spotting that bargain. Danny, who's been accused of bad language?
Well, this is a report that Chuka Ramuna is... put out suggesting that immigrants who come to Britain either before they get here or when they arrive here should be able to speak English. Or they should learn English when they arrive here. And the report also suggested, which I didn't understand quite so well, that people should be allocated to different regions of the country. Now, I'm Jewish and both my parents are refugees to Britain. I'm not quite sure how it would work to be there. Congratulations, you've arrived in the country, but you've been allocated to Wrexham, and now you have to walk to synagogue from there.
I think it's a very good idea that people should learn the language if they come here. I mean, I love this country, and the reason I love this country is because all my friends are here. All my family are here, and I can't speak any other language. If you can't speak the language, you're always going to be, you know, an outsider. And in the same way that the British expats in Spain are very much outsiders, aren't they? Because there was all the talk for Vote Leave, wasn't there, of all the criminals coming into Britain. But obviously, we've got quite a lot of British criminals over on the Costa del Sol. And now that we've voted Leave, it seems likely that a lot of those will be coming back to Britain. It would have been quite a powerful campaign slogan, wouldn't it? Vote Remain, keep British criminals in Spain.
The reason that our expats in Spain don't learn the language is no one likes the grass. But, yeah, people should learn the language when they get here, but then people should do lots of it. It doesn't need to be the law, does it? I mean, it's polite, if you're in another country, to at least try, even if you're on holiday, to say adios or Achtung or Banzai, you know, one of those, say one of those foreign things, they seem to like it. But, you know, it's polite. And if you arrive in a country, as Danny's parents did, you know, eventually you learn the language, yeah, you should make the effort. You don't need to make it the law. I mean, it's like, I don't think people should hold their knives like a pen, but I don't think they should be arrested for it.
I think it's partly about the language that it's sort of couched in, isn't it? I mean, some newspapers had headlines, migrants being forced to learn English, but you could just say migrants are being given English lessons, which is a slightly sort of more positive spin on it, isn't it? But, I mean, you know, that is better, I'd have thought, than refusing to give people English lessons. I mean, at least sort of allowing them to integrate in some way.
I arrived in this country July 17th, 1961, in a maternity hospital in Hampshire. Couldn't speak a word of English. I'd never paid in. I got a roof over my head. I got child benefit. It's not right, I'm telling you.
That Casey report that came out about integration, and one of them was that people should learn the language, wasn't it? And the other one was that we needed kids to mix at an early age. That was the best way to get integration in British society. But now we've got this idea of these religious state schools, haven't we? 100%. Religiously selective, and you're thinking that's not going to... It's madness, isn't it? There's going to be no integration whatsoever. Apparently, they're only going to work if people who are not from that religion would, if there was space, send their kid to it. They'd be able to send... You think, how is that possibly going to work as a test? I mean, just in the example, if you were part of the Jedi religion, you'd be unlikely to say you were very happy for your kid to go to a school that was 100% Sith.
So it's a very real fear for a lot of households, I think. But I think, in a way, like at university, you sort of turn up to a seminar and you haven't sort of done any of the work, and if you can sort of muddle through for 2 hours, you think, I could do this for 4 years, really. I mean, I would love to speak less, to be honest, not have to spend my life sort of desperately explaining myself and appealing for calm.
There was, as Danny said, there was basically part of the report was talking about quotas and about saying that where there should be more immigration, some SNP MPs wanted more immigration in their areas. Various MPs were saying they wanted to reduce the number of immigration. So the idea was that you picked different parts of the country, had different rules for that.
The Canadian system.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're thinking, well, actually, those people who have actually, it turned out, have got the least immigration were often the ones who are most against immigration, whereas those parts of the country which actually had more immigrants seemed to be more OK with it. You know, I grew up in Cornwall, and there we regarded anybody from Devon as an immigrant. We had one bloke across the road who was known as the Traveller. Because he'd once been up to London by train.
They are funny in Cornwall. Whenever you go there, people in Cornwall say, oh, a lot of artists come here for the light. And you have to break it to them, no, they have light other places on it. Oh, no. I went to Plymouth one time, I couldn't see a bloody thing.
It's funny, different countries do have different attitudes to how they sort of assimilate people into it. Like, there's a project I read about in Berlin where they train immigrants to be museum guides, and I think that's a lovely... Yeah, we should definitely do that here, because most of the stuff in the British Museum does belong to them.
Conspicuously, this is a report on immigration delivered by Parliament's all-party group on social integration, and it really is all-party. The study says the group believes that all immigrants should be expected to have either learned English or be enrolled in compulsory English classes upon arrival. Bit unfair of them, having to start their new life in a new country by having to write an essay about the role of the third-person narrator in Tess of the D'Urbervilles. The report suggests that Britain adopts a Canadian system, where presumably an area the size of the Midlands will be forced to speak French. Under the Canadian system, local authorities would set their own targets for migrants. If different regions do decide how many visas to give out, we should announce them like football results. Cumbria, 47. Kent, minus two. 2 points to Danny. Andy, who's not Russian to listen to the intelligence?
This is Donald Trump still saying, you know, his security services saying that... the Russians hacked during the election campaign, and him saying he believes Assange more, who's saying that it wasn't the Russians. And, you know, Donald Trump, he said in 2010, didn't he, when it came to WikiLeaks, now he's sort of agreeing with Julian Assange, when it came to 2010, he basically said that people like Assange and WikiLeaks, they should be liable to the death penalty, anybody who sort of let out American secrets. Donald Trump has basically contradicted himself everything he's ever said.
Oh, I'm so bored of having to talk about Trump. It's like people say, oh, Trump's a gift to comedians. He isn't, because he's done all the jokes himself. He's a gift in as much as he's given you a box of chocolates, but he's eaten them all. And I don't know what he's going to do, because you just have to look at what he's doing, the teams he's building up around him. What's he going to do? You know, he's got a defence secretary. He's in line to be a defence secretary. It's a man called General Mad Dog Matus. Now, I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure that's not his Native American name. And
I've been reading with great fascination Donald Trump's statements on intelligence. He says he's a great fan of intelligence, and I thought, well, I don't think the feeling's mutual.
It should be no surprise to the Americans that the Russians were trying to hack them, is it? I mean, let's face it, the Americans themselves were bugging for 10 years Angela Merkel's phone. And she actually phoned up, didn't she, Barack Obama, to complain. And you think, well, what was the point of that? Yeah. Presumably, he already knew she was unhappy and was expecting her call.
Well, I basically really hope the Russians are reading my emails, because that means someone is.
They can hack absolutely anything now, can't they? Now we've got this Internet of Things, worried about them hacking our kettles or whatever. you turn up home, you know, the kettle's boiling, the coffee maker's all over the floor, the fridge is open and the heating's knackered, and, you're there thinking you've had some burglar or something, it's just some 12-year-old in Macedonia who's been having a right laugh.
Vivaciously, this is the news that President-elect and friend of the show, Donald Trump, has criticised US intelligence services who have alleged Russian interference in the presidential election. Trump doesn't trust the CIA, and quite frankly, neither do I. What really happened at Area 51? What exactly is Article 50? Who's even in Level 42? I expect there are some things that we'll never know. Julian Assange has backed Trump up, and in these times of mistrust, it's good to know there's such a thing as brotherly solidarity amongst paranoid sex pests. Also this week, in response to alleged Russian interference in the US election, President Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats. It was a sad sight seeing them ushered out of their offices in high order before being placed inside each other. Blah, 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 blah. 2 points to Andy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Jeremy.
Niles, this was sent in by Simon Kinniston. This is what he heard on Radio 4's PM in a discussion about fashion. Every time I see a youth with jeans hanging off their backside, usually along with quite a lot of their underwear visible, I have the overwhelming urge to give them a quick tug.
Angela.
Well, I'm going to try here, Miles, something that I think might be a first for News Quiz. I'm going to try a foreign language newspaper. So this has been sent in from Kathy Radford and family, and it's an Austrian cutting. It's from the Tiroler Tageszeitung. Now, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, so we'll give it a go, right? I'm going to do this in German. See if you can understand what I'm saying. Selfie mit Krokodil endete nicht gut.
Danny.
Well, this is a flyer from Blackpool Council promoting volunteering sent in by Katie Upton, and it said, Leighton Cemetery needs you.
Andy.
I've got Ian Baird from the Isle of Portland in Dorset saw this in the Dorset Echo. It's about a forthcoming gig by famous blues singer Chris Farlow at the Tivoli Theatre in Wimborne. Theatre manager Charlie North Lewis said Chris Farlow was the first he ever booked for the Tivoli. He is a regular here, and it is always such a lovely night at the Tivoli, he never fails to disappoint. I'm playing the Tivoli soon on tour, so I'm looking forward to a new quote for the poster.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Danny and Andy have 7, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Angela with 8. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Augusta Margaret River Times sent in by Alan Hull in Western Australia.
A local man was fined on Monday for repeated trespassing and criminal damage. Margaret River Magistrates Court heard how the man entered a local school building by forcing open a window with another man.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Angela Barnes, Danny Finkelstein and Andy Parsons. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by Liam Byrne, James Kettle and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Susie Ruffle and Robin Morgan. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.